Hey everybody. Ooh, cold mic. Cold microphone. Ugh, well I'm back. Five down, seven to go. May have hit the wall partway through this one. Just in the workshop. I wasn't as patient in the workshop as I've been. And I think that that manifested only in my mind. But in my mind it manifested as when people were commenting on something and were saying something that didn't make sense or whatever, I was just like, oh my god, why? For this I flew out here? You know what I mean? That kind of thing. But that's the worst effect so far. I have a new nominee for worst person on the flight. It's two people. I never figured out who exactly it was, but just talking loud as shit the entire time. I know the plane is loud and you gotta talk a little louder to be heard, but it's like, just put your heads closer to each other's heads and you'll be able to hear each other fine without shouting. Like, I don't know. I wish I could fly on a plane for grown-ups that's like, look, no shouting, don't be shouting at somebody else, don't do this, don't do that. I mean, just get on the plane and go to the place you need to go and then get off the plane. Met an interesting fella on the train. He gets on the train, it's like 8:30 a.m., he's drinking a beer. Well, he kept calling it a beer. It was clearly a cider, which I was like, uh-huh. Real tough guy, huh? And he's definitely smelled like booze, so I was like, I don't know. He seemed like basically a homeless guy, but I couldn't tell for sure, but there was later a thing that made me think maybe. Anyway, he strikes up a conversation. You know, as he is wont to do, I guess. He tells me he's got, in his bag, he's got steaks. He's got three steaks, which he does have. And he's like, I bought steaks last night, too. And mashed potatoes, like ready-made ones. Normally, I like to do it myself. But this time, I bought the ready-made kind because I was like, I'm going to have a good dinner. And he's like, then I got drunk. And I was on the bus, and I lost all my stuff. I lost my steaks, my food, whatever. And I was like, well, that's too bad. And he's like, yeah, so I'm trying again. So he has this shopping bag, and sure enough, he shows me there's three steaks in there. So then, we're like going to the airport. We're on the train to the airport, and he's telling me about how, you know, he's lived in Oregon for like 4 years, but he's just kind of getting to know Portland. He was living with his girlfriend somewhere, I guess. And he's like, last time I was out here, it's been a long time. He's like, because I haven't flown since like 2004. But I did come out to the airport, and I was just kind of wandering around talking to people in line and stuff and asking, like, how hard do you think it would be for me to sneak onto an airplane? And he's like, before too long, security came and was like, are you so... They said his name. They're like, are you... And they said his name, and he's like, yeah, how did you know my name? And that was what the question I was asking him on the train. I was like, how did they know your name? And he was like, yeah, well, they knew my name somehow, and so... Then they were like, okay, we heard you were trying to sneak onto an airline. He's like, I'm just joking around, you know? I was like, yeah, I mean, they're not like the most into that. You know, they don't love the joking around so much, these folks. I gotta say, if there's one thing about them, they don't really care for the joking around. So then he's telling me that's his last thing at the airport. And every stop we get to, he's like, oh my god, when did they put all this shit out here? And I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, it's been here for like 10 years. I don't know. He's like, all right. And then, so I mean, it's impossible that it came. But he did also admit, I was very drunk the last time I came out here. I don't remember any of this. So he was kind of saying, I'm going to leave the door open that this was here. And I may not have remarked upon it. Because I may not have actually been cognizant of it. Because I may not have been cognizant of much of anything. So then we get off at the airport, you know, the train kind of ends at the airport. And I was like, I wonder if this guy's just going to like stay on the train or what? I mean, he's not flying anywhere, obviously. He's got an open beer and he's got steaks, like raw steaks in a bag. So I pretty much assumed, I don't know why he bought these steaks and now he's just like cruising the train. I don't know what that plan's about, but whatever. Not a very food safety oriented plan, I'll say that. So he gets off and he's, I don't know, throughout he had chatted, he was talking about how he liked Charles Bukowski and Hunter S. Thompson. And how he knew Hunter S. Thompson was going to kill himself, because he's like, he talked about it all the time. Like, when he was too old to wipe his ass, he was going to put a, what did he say, a revolver in his mouth. And then he did it. And I was like, see, I told you, I told everyone that he was going to do that, and he did. And, yeah, and he said something, he was talking about Bukowski, and he's like, I was like, yeah, Bukowski's pretty great. And he's like, was pretty great. You know, he's dead. But, whatever. So then, he gets off at the airport, and he just goes up the escalator, starts going in the airport. And I was like, well, this is interesting, like, what's he doing? So he's on the escalator, he's waiting in line for the escalator, and I'm going up the stairs, because I always think, and he's like, alright, well, I'll see you later. He's like, I'm gonna go inside here, see if I can find a bathroom. And he's like, I had to pee, and that was before I drank my breakfast. He's like, I haven't eaten breakfast in like 14 years. Everything from him is like how long it's been since he's done a normal thing, I guess. I haven't been here in this long. I haven't eaten a breakfast in 14 years. I haven't done this. I haven't done that. And so, you know, he's just kind of interesting with the details. So then I see him in the airport. He's kind of cruising around. He's got his paper sack. And he just starts going through the security line. And then he's chatting with some guy outside the security line. And the guy outside the security line seemed to be, like, mildly amused by whatever he said. And then he goes through most of the security line. And then he comes back out. And he did this a couple times. And I was like, what is this guy doing? Like, what is his plan? What's the end game here? I don't feel like this ends well for this guy, but I could be wrong. Maybe this is... This is my question. How does this end well for anybody? Like, how does this turn out to be a good decision? Or how does this get him further along than if he hadn't done that? You know what I mean? Like, it just seems... It seems like this is nothing but trouble, right? To just walk into the airport and, like, get in line, get out of line, whatever. I don't know. It seems like a poor decision... made by, I mean, I guess a drunken, possibly homeless guy. He said he had a house. He said he had an apartment, but he was admiring some of the tent cities, and he's like, that's bigger than my apartment. So who knows? I don't know. But on the other hand, it's a Tuesday morning. He's out on the train at like 8:30, shit-faced, and has been to the grocery store already. And his second attempt to eat steaks, you're just like, I wonder what's going on with this fella. How did he end up in this position? What is his normal day to day? For all I know, he's got like a legit job and he whatever, but it didn't seem like it. He told me a story that his foster mom married a rich guy when he was a kid, and they went out on a boat like in Mexico. And he liked the ocean a lot. And his foster brother was freaked out because he's like, what if the boat sinks? And he's like, well, if the boat sinks, we'll die. And then he's like, oh, yeah, that would be terrible. And then also he's like, I was kind of sitting on this bottom part of the boat. And they were like, don't sit down there. You know, you could fall off and you'll drown. He's like, but I wasn't going to drown. I was like, you've got a motor on this boat. You could come back around and pick me up. I can swim long enough for you to come get me. Don't be stereotypical. He was black. Is why. I guess I need to add that detail in order for that to make any sense. He also told me a racist joke about aspirin. So look it up if you're interested. This was actually one of the things that made me think he might be homeless. I've heard like a lot of jokes from homeless people. Like They seem to especially be into, like, racial jokes and stuff like that. Poking fun at the self. I did this online class about working with homeless people at the library. I was talking about how a lot of times they will have jokes because, like, sense of humor is something that is often developed, according to this class, because it's free. Like, a joke is free, so you don't have to pay for it. It's free entertainment. And I was like, all right, makes sense. So anyway, he told this joke, which I feel like I'd heard before, but then I was like, I don't know, where would I have heard that before? And then he told me that a lot of times other black people get really mad when he tells that joke. But he's like, I don't care, it's funny. I mean, this guy does not seem like a easily shamed individual, to say the least. I mean, he seems like a little bit of a rule breaker. They got this guy off the train, too, I guess, this, like, I don't know. There were a couple, this guy that I was talking to and this other lady who also seemed to be vaguely homeless were talking about how they totally singled this other guy out and whatever, but, like, they got him off the train, and he, like, stood. When he got off the train, he stood, and he was kind of, like, leaned with his head back up against, like, a light pole, and then he reached his arms up to, like, hold on to the pole above his own head. It's like the kind of move that you only see someone do when they're super fucked up, because you're like, maybe just sit down instead of doing that maneuver. So it's entirely possible they singled this guy out for no reason, but I'm gonna leave some room that they may have singled this guy out because he seemed pretty, I would have been questioning whether this individual was, you know, capable of anything, basically. Ugh. So that's the travel. I'm so fucking tired. I had to get up at 4:30 in the morning last time, and I never really caught up. So I got up at 4:30, then the next day I got up at like 9 or something, 8 or 9. 9. I thought what would be fun. I've watched a few movies, because I've watched a couple on the plane, and then I think we watched like 3 movies yesterday, on Saturday. Because basically I was like, I'm going to come in on Saturday, and I have a strong suspicion that I'm not going to want to do shit. I mean, like, I don't think it's going to be tough for me to get up, and this was totally correct. I got there, I put on sweatpants, and just like laid on the floor. So we watched a few movies yesterday, and then I've seen a couple movies outside of that. So I haven't done a lot of movie reviews for a while. So what movies has Pete seen? Let's see, he started with Monster Squad, which I thought I had not seen, and then it became pretty clear to me I watched over Halloween, for sure. Because I didn't think I'd seen all of it, but it has this really super cheesy ending. It's like, I think Monster Squad would have been a total classic if it had just had a little touch-up from, like, you know, one of these, Rob Reiner guys or something like that. Is that the guy I'm thinking of? You know, it just needed a little bit of, it was like somewhere between, like, Goonies and E.T. and Stand By Me and that kind of stuff, but it was, like, a little bit cheesy and stupid, but it does have a great revenge moment because a bully picks on this kid and then the bully immediately gets his comeuppance. So I feel like that was maybe lazy writing, but I liked it anyway because I was just like, you know, usually you gotta wait to the end of the movie and then fucking Frankenstein will fuck this kid up or something, this bully. But it's like, no, we got it immediately. Immediate gratification in that case totally worked. I think it subverted the expectation. So how should I, what would be my scale, my ratings scale, you know, Demolition Man being the best thing to, what would be the worst thing to put on the opposite end of the scale? I don't think I watch a lot of movies that I hate because I just don't end up watching them, but I, you know, whatever. Just something boring bullshit. This was somewhere right in the middle. I would say not quite entertaining enough for a plane. This is another interesting thing, right? Is if you're watching it on the plane, it's got to have a high enough entertainment value that you're like not totally distracted the whole time. You're like, oh, this is engaging to my brain. So let's see. After that, I watched, what the fuck was that movie called? Not Night Gallery, it's not Tales from the Crypt, but it's like the comic book one where Stephen King is in it. Fuck. I shouldn't have given all these clues to it, because now someone's probably like, oh, it's this, and I'm like, oh, yeah, but I can't hear anyone, so I don't know what it is. And you just have to, like, listen to me struggle. Anyway, it's a bunch of different, Creepshow. George Romero movie. Of, zombie fame. Lots of little short stories that are like kind of these almost like short stories they'd have in comic books back in the day. Short stories of terror. Terrifying tales of terror that are fairly tertiary. I was trying to think of a word that means short that start time sensitive. They're very time short. Pretty good. Again, not George Romero's best. Here's one of the problems it's got. Like, it's got some pretty good stories in it, but stuff happens for no real reason. Like, there's a pretty good one. It seems like the setup was really good, but then the payoff was kind of weak, where Leslie Nielsen's just this crazy motherfucker, and he kidnaps people, and then what he does is has them dig a hole on the beach, and then get in and then bury themselves up to their neck. And then they basically drown when the tide comes in. You know, he's like, if you can hold your breath a long time, you could survive because, you know, a wave will come in, cover them up, and then go out and so on and so forth. Ted Danson is one of his victims. But anyway, Ted Danson and the other lady, who's like, I guess, his wife or something, they just come back as zombies for no real reason and then bury Leslie Nielsen in that same scenario. So it's like, it was good. Like, the effects, the monster effects were great. Bonus points because when I'm watching this, like, you know, these shambling zombies, I was next to this little kid who was, like, watching what was on the screen. And I never really considered what to do about. I've never really watched movies on the plane before, other than like if one was offered. And so I figured if it was offered, like if there was something fucked up in it, that was their fault, right? So I'm like watching this movie and then I'm thinking, huh, I wonder if like, should this kid be seeing this? What would his parents think? And then I was like, oh, fuck them. Like, he's just kind of looking over my shoulder. If he doesn't want to look, he can look away. And these zombies don't look, they look great to me because they're like practical effects and all that stuff, but they don't look terrifying. It's not like they have entrails and stuff. They just kind of look like your old school zombies where it's like, we just dragged him through a bunch of slime while he's wearing a suit. So, scale on that one. That one's probably, maybe I should just stack all the movies in comparison. If you've never seen either, I would probably watch The Monster Squad over Creepshow. But Creepshow does have a lot to offer. I would say it also, it has things, you know, it does transitions where it turns into a comic book and then back into a movie and stuff. That's pretty great. I mean, that's quality stuff. And that's something that, you know, countless others subsequently ripped off, so it's worth seeing, like, I don't know if that was the first one to do it. I doubt it, but they did it really well. So that's something. It even had a little framing story for the whole movie, which was nice. It's a nice way to tell sort of vignettes. Got to have that frame in there that brings me out from the beginning and the end. I just wish that it had been in the middle somewhere, because I think having it at like the beginning and the end, I think that's how it was. I'm trying to remember now. But it seemed like could have used a second shot in the middle just to keep me reminded.
All right, I watched Split,
by filmmaker M. Night Shyamalan. Now, this is a guy who's taken a lot of shit for a lot of his movies. I never saw The Village. Lady in the Water was crazy, but I thought it was fairly compelling. I mean, I don't know. He takes a lot of shit, I think, because he's trying to do these big endings. But I think he's like a pretty competent movie maker in terms of like, hey, when I watch one of his movies, I'm entertained. And I don't even mean that on the level of, it's not like I'm saying, oh, when I watch Transformers, I'm entertained because there's visuals and shit. I mean, like, I don't know. There's a story. You're kind of waiting to see what happens. What's the happening, if you will. I guess maybe the happening was probably his... That was probably his, like, big downfall, right? Not The Village. I feel like people hated The Village. But then The Happening seemed to be the one that everyone was like, okay. Okay. But anyway, also, I think it's kind of funny because they give this guy a lot of shit because he puts himself in his movies, right? Like, he's in there and they're like, who does he think he is? Alfred fucking Hitchcock or something like that? And it's like, I mean, why now? It's like 2018. And when a director puts themselves in the movie, like, just for a quick cameo, we're always comparing them to Alfred Hitchcock. Like, he's the only guy who's ever done that. And, like, you know, well, this is how you should do it, is like Hitchcock. You shouldn't have a speaking role or anything. I mean, M. Night Shyamalan's in his own movies for, like, 30 seconds. I don't feel like it's obsessive here. Or excessive is the word I'm looking for. So there you go, M. Night. Mr. Night. I wonder what the M stands for. I wonder if Night is... I wonder if that's his name. M. Night. It would be kind of weird if you had, you know... Okay, this name, it's not a bad name, but it's a mouthful. Shyamalan. And the way it's spelled and said... I don't even know if Shyamalan is how it's actually said. But... it's quite a mouthful, so why would you change the M. Night and have that be... I mean, he made that very simple, and then the Shyamalan is like, what the fuck? I don't get it. I do not get it. So there you go, M. Night Shyamalan. So I watched Split. That was one of his newer joints. Can I call it a joint? So James McAvoy plays a character with a sort of, one of the problems with movies, I think, like that movie in particular, would be so much better if you went into it knowing nothing, because I think that, they unspool things a little too slowly in a few ways, and so you know a lot more than the character knows. Now, sometimes this can be effective, we talked about this in workshop yesterday, right? Where Chuck was talking about kind of body horror stuff. And he was talking about his story Guts. And if you don't know that story, it's basically a story about a guy who gets his intestines sucked out by a pool suction drain thing. Basically gets turned inside out from the asshole a little bit. It's super disgusting. The description goes on so long, and it's pretty great. And so, funny enough, he told us kind of like a background story of that, which is like he was in the car with somebody, and they were reading like the newspaper. It was like the Willamette Weekly or whatever, like one of those city newspapers that like tells you what's going on and has a lot of ads for sex shops and escort services and shit. And someone wrote this article, and he's like, they wrote this article that went, it's beautiful spring, time is coming, children, whatever, the smell of cut grass. And he's like, it was this very lyrical whatever. And he's like, and then it ends with this phrase that was like, and, you know, children are all playing in the pool where this summer four of them statistically are going to be disemboweled, or the suction will cause four of them to be disemboweled. And he's like, it was this very beautiful, like, overdone, purpley description of everything that just ended in this word disemboweled. And so that, I think, was kind of the germ of the idea there. But anyway, we were talking about, what were we talking about? Fuck. Body horror, guts. Oh, okay. The audience knowing something the character doesn't. So there's a part in Guts where the guy's getting his intestines sucked out and he's trying to swim to the top, but he sees a rope holding him from the, you know, from his asshole to the drain. And then he's like, or it's like a snake that came up through and it's bit his asshole and it's like holding him back so he can't swim up. And he's like, the reader at that point knows what is happening. And so what this does, though, is it makes the reader smarter than the narrator, and then that builds sympathy with the narrator. Because the reader is like, this poor idiot doesn't even know what's happening to him, but I totally know what's happening to him. So it gives this reader this sense that, it gives like a little sense of tragedy, I guess you might say. So the reader is feeling smarter than the narrator, and but doesn't feel great about the fact, because it's such a horrific detail. So I guess that the way it seems to work in movies, though, is that it's almost like they assume, I guess they make the movie and they don't know how it's going to be marketed and stuff like that. They like make the movie and aren't responsible for, you know, the fact that the preview kind of ruins the first 45 minutes of the movie. But then I guess the people who make the preview, right, are like, listen, we got to get people to go. So we got to show them something interesting. So I don't know. That's how I felt about Split. Was like, there was a lot of build up in like trying to prove something to be true when you already sort of know it if you're watching the movie. But it wasn't bad. Again, I like this dude's movies. I think that even though sometimes what he has to say is dumb or not what I think, I think it's interesting that he always has sort of an explicit thing he's trying to say, like an explicit message to the movie. I don't know if he's always successful, but I just think it's kind of, it's almost like he makes movies, like you can see he has a purpose to each movie, right? Like I think I heard Lady in the Water was basically he wanted to make like a bedtime story. And it was like, okay, I get that, like that kind of works in that capacity. Or, you know, Unbreakable is like a superhero story, right? So I don't know. There's something interesting there. I'm not sure what it is. And I'm not sure if he'll, like, go down in history as, like, one of the greats or what. It'll be interesting to see, because it's, like, commercially and critically, he's definitely had more misses than hits, right? I mean, he hasn't had a ton of hits under his belt, unfortunately. His ratios are not fantastic. But on the other hand, I don't know. He's not a monster, it seems like, so that's good. I watched, let's see, what did we watch yesterday? Watched a couple things. We watched Lethal Weapon. The first one. It's pretty good. It's still pretty good. I don't know. Sometimes, I guess, people feel like these things don't hold up. But Lethal Weapon is pretty great. It's like I think the most dated part of it, other than that great cell phone that's like a briefcase, is there's a lot of saxophone stings in it. I really want to make like a soundboard with saxophone stings for myself for the radio show, so I'll say something like, and then, you know, that's when I saw the guy getting in line. That seemed dated somehow. Also, it was like they were busting this group of people who were importing heroin into Los Angeles, which I was like, well, okay, call me crazy. I don't know if that would be like a bad enough crime today for like a Lethal Weapon movie. I think it'd be a bad enough crime. I mean, it's a bad crime, but it's not like a visceral, look how bad these people are crime. It needs something else. I mean, they get involved in it because this young lady gets killed as a result of, basically, she gets close to it somehow. But I think it just doesn't quite... It doesn't make you, like, hate the criminal bad guys as much as it needs to or something. So I don't know. But overall, I recommend it. It looks like all the Lethal Weapons, I know 1, 2, and 4 are on Netflix, which are probably, that's probably the order of enjoyment of them too. Having not seen any of them in a long time, I think it probably goes 1, 2, 4, 3. But I don't really remember. I just kind of remember the beginning of 4. And, you know, of course, the toilet bomb on 2. Good stuff. Also, the Murtaugh family seems to live in this weird utopic neighborhood where everybody is black. Like, all the kids in the neighborhood. I don't know how that happened. I mean, I guess there are neighborhoods like that. It looks like the whitest neighborhood. But what are you gonna do? I guess it's part of it is like it's a reversal too, right? Because you're like, Murtaugh is the family man and da-da-da-da, and Riggs is like the piece of shit. So anyway, and you know, their demographics would suggest possibilities otherwise. But you know, what are you going to do? Also, it seems like everyone in this movie is a Vietnam veteran. Like everybody. So you're like, okay. That was a thing that they got to use for a long time in movies. It was like, just make him a Vietnam vet. And it's like, for why? And it's like, well, I don't know. You could explain anything that way. You could be like, why does he know how to, you know, why is he one of the best shooters in the entire world? And it's like, I don't know, Vietnam. Why does he know how to, like, conceal himself in the desert? I don't know, Vietnam. Why does he... Crazy. I don't know, Vietnam? I mean, you can just kind of throw, I don't know, Vietnam into everything. That was a good train to ride for a while. I think that, like, Lethal Weapons, if I remember them correctly, starting in 2, but especially after 2, part of the problem was, like, Riggs wasn't crazy anymore. And it's like, well, if he's not crazy, he's not really Riggs, is he? I mean, you need to be this buddy cop movie, you gotta have 2 sort of different cops learning to get along. But once they're getting along, it's really not as fun, is it? I don't think it's as fun. But there you go. We watched one buddy cop movie, so we watched another. We watched Men in Black, which is like totally a buddy cop movie with, you know, a space alien twist. That holds up pretty good, too. Some of the effects are sort of shitty. But, I mean, what can you do? It's like a fucking... How old is that movie at this point? 20-some years? I mean, it's pretty old. So, like, all that considered, it holds up. Probably the thing that holds up the least is Will Smith's wardrobe. And then the rap song at the end. Na, na, na. That doesn't hold up as well as some of the other parts of the movie. I don't know what to call them. Some of the other set decoration, some of the other special effects. If we could call Will Smith a special effect, which I'm willing to do, his wardrobe and music stylings were not his strongest points. How about that? Tommy Lee Jones, pretty good. I thought it was funny watching it now. So they have this beginning scene, right, where it's Tommy Lee Jones and his original partner, who is like 1,000 years old. I mean, they needed to get an old man because he had to retire, quote unquote. No, he did retire. They like flash his memory and then he's done being a man in black, right? When I say retire, quote unquote, I think it makes it sound like, and they blew his brains out. And like, no, I mean, he just actually retired. But he retires. But it's like, they had to find the oldest man ever. But I guess that's probably right because Tommy Lee Jones was also old. So they're like, well, he's got to be significantly older than Tommy Lee Jones. Because otherwise it's going to be like, why wouldn't you just do... I mean, Tommy Lee Jones, shouldn't he be retiring as well? Once he found that one-armed man, that was the bust of a lifetime. He should have gone out on top at that point. But no, he came back for U.S. Marshals. Why? So anyway, it was good. I thought it was good. I know this comes as an incredible shock. I'm like, Men in Black was a pretty good movie. I mean, it just kind of keeps moving. They've got a good clock, they said at the beginning, so you're basically like, okay, so this needs to happen. But it also kind of makes room for itself to do stupid shit, too, because basically Tommy Lee Jones is like, listen, don't go crazy. Like, this happens every day. Every day there's some crisis. Every day there's this. Every day there's that. Like, it's not... This is not something special. This is life. And you're like, oh, okay. Well, so then that makes it, I don't know. Makes it so that the new guy can be kind of freaked out by the whole thing and he can be like, it's not a big deal. It works. Classic buddy cop. I did wonder in the movie, like, watching it now as an adult. Okay, as a kid, you don't really think about this because you're like, so being one of the men in black, you have to like basically lose your entire identity. You know, they burn his fingerprints off and delete him. They like Tommy Lee Jones backspaces his name off of a giant computer screen, which I guess symbolizes like, and now he's deleted from the world, you know, and it's showing all his various membership cards and stuff, like his social security card, and then there's like Gold's Gym membership card, and he deletes that, and I'm like, I mean, is anyone really going to know, like, he has a Gold's Gym membership and then it's like that expires and they're like, ooh, you know, buy again now to get whatever percent. Like, does Gold's Gym say, whatever happened to that guy? Whatever happened to that Edwards? Was that his name? Whatever happened to that Edwards guy? He was real cool. I hope nothing completely insane happened that has changed the course of his life forever. And if so, I hope it was by his choice and that he's enjoying it. But maybe we should investigate. We're the staff of Gold's Gym. That seems like something we're qualified to do. And interested in doing and have time for. All the things that would, you know, suggest that maybe we should do it, I think are in place. So let's do it. Gold's Gym. Okay, we also watched National Treasure, starring Nicolas Cage as National. I had never seen this movie, and it totally fits in with those great Nicolas Cage movies of the early 90s of, like, you know, The Rock and Con Air, that kind of stuff. It definitely goes into that category of where you're like, I mean, it's good. Like, it's super cheesy in some ways, but it's pretty good. You know, and it's just funny because, like, when someone's like, we're going to steal the Declaration of Independence, you're like, oh, shit. There's this great moment because they were talking about how, you know, the Declaration's in this frame with bulletproof glass and stuff like that. And these other guys are coming down a hallway, and I was like, please tell me that he uses the Declaration of Independence as a shield to deflect bullets. And sure enough, he does. And at that point, I was like, all right, you know what? This is the thing about these kind of movies. Like, you don't want them to get all high and mighty and shit. It's like the mistake they made in The Expendables. that I talk about all the time, where it's like you have this crazy movie where it's like Jason Statham and Jet Li and Dolph Lundgren and Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger and Bruce Willis, and they're all together. But you're like, what are they stopping? And you're like, human trafficking. And it's a little bit of, that's not very fun. They should have been stopping heroin dealer. You know, someone bringing in drugs or something like, or guns. You know, just something kind of generic that doesn't have a human face, I guess. I think in the other one they're stopping, like, basically child labor in a mine or something like that. Which I never understood. They did that in that Temple of Doom, too. And I was like, why would you want child labor in a mine if you're just going to, like, enslave people with those magic stones? Why don't you just enslave adults? I mean, they could probably get a lot more work done. They're much stronger than kids. Especially a lot of the adults they had there. I was like, these guys are all huge and ripped. Why wouldn't you have that guy mining? Also, it seemed like they were mining for, like, diamonds or something, like, for money type stuff. Which seemed crazy, because I was like, well, you can control people all you want with your magic stones. And if someone defies you, you can just pull their heart out. Like, what purpose does money serve in your life, exactly? Like, what function does money have? Why do you need a couple bucks in your wallet when you go to the market or whatever? I don't get it. That I did not get. And of course, I mean, you're talking National Treasure, the inevitable Indiana Jones thing comes up. Like, National Treasure's not as action-y as Indiana Jones, which is fine. It's more, like, puzzly and mysterious, I guess. But, yeah, pretty classic. Pretty classic, and, you know, I don't know. It avoids getting all high and mighty for the most part about, like, there was one part, and Poonmaster Flex looked at me because she knew it was coming, because they've stolen the Declaration of Independence. And they're, is that what I said, the Declaration of Independence, or did I say something else? Doesn't matter. It's the Declaration of Independence. They've stolen it, and they bring it back to, like, Independence Hall. And Nicolas Cage stops for a moment. He's like, this is the first time this document's been in this place since it was signed. And, you know, she looks... Poonmaster Flex is looking at me like, oh, come on, give me a break. Who cares? And I was like, you're right. I mean, I guess that guy would care about that, but I wouldn't either. So anyway, they solve a bunch of puzzles. The bad guy from GoldenEye is the bad guy, because he seems to be the bad guy almost all the time. He was also the human... sort of Viking-ish guy in Lord of the Rings, right? Who I think we all assumed was going to turn on Frodo. And I wonder if we all assumed that because it's like, well, that's kind of what this guy does in movies. This guy is a turner-oner and not like a turn-honorer. So, you know, a turn-honorer is like you arouse people. A turner-oner is someone who turns on everybody. So anyway, National Treasure. I mean, here's the thing about a National Treasure. If you watch a National Treasure and you don't get what you expected, that's your own fault. I don't know what you thought the movie was going to be. If you thought it was going to be a thoughtful trip through history, or you thought it was going to be like a slick heist movie or whatever, you know, whatever... whatever you thought it was going to be, and then you were disappointed by what it was, the problem was your expectation being incorrect. It's like, you know what National Treasure is? It's like the perfect movie to sit and watch when you woke up at 4:30 in the morning, and you're like, I just kind of want to watch something where all the shit happens. And, you know, John Voight's in it at the beginning in a terrible de-ageifying. Whenever they try to de-age John Voight, which it seems like they do all the time, they give him, like, dark-colored hair and a mustache. But he still has the same hair, the same face, just with, like, a dark, shitty-looking mustache on. And you're like, I mean, it doesn't really look a lot younger. I think what they need to start doing with John Voight is not age him, or not de-age him, and then age him forward when he's in, like, the new, in the current time. So, you know, they make him look like he does now, just throw a little makeup on him and stuff, and that's the past. And then when they get to the present, they basically could just do nothing, right? And just, he would just kind of look like shit. Just be like, I don't know, maybe, like, knock out 5 hours of sleep tomorrow night, come back to set, and just don't sit in the makeup chair, don't do anything, and just kind of look like that. Don't brush your teeth. I just feel like that'll make you act older. And there you go. Done. It just seems easier to me. It seems like a lot less work. Maybe that's insulting, though. Maybe it's insulting to be like, so, Mr. Voight, when you're playing old you is going to be you. And young you is going to be a mustache. That's probably less insulting than, so, young you is going to be you. And old you is also going to be you, but how you actually look. Because basically, as a celebrity, the way you look in real life is like the shitty-looking version of you on screen. We figured it out. Cracked the code. Oh man, this drive seems so long today. It seems long every day, but today it seems long and tiring. Maybe that might have been part of last night too, as I was so fucking tired that I just wanted to really wanted to sleep. Like, that's all I've wanted to do for, the last 3 weeks is sleep, but for those last couple hours, the last hour of the workshop, I was like, I'd like to sleep now. My turn is next at the workshop. So I've got to send a piece to Chuck and Lydia by Friday at midnight. It's Tuesday. I've got a piece. I think it's all right. I think it's, like, ready-ish. So I'll probably work on it for a few more hours between now and Friday, and then send it on its way. And then I'll read out loud and get critique at the workshop. I had to go either this week or the following week, because then after that, I'm going to have my gum graft. And was like, I probably won't want to do it for, like, I think it 2 weeks after the first one. I remember I was like, 2 weeks after is when I felt pretty much normal. It's like I wasn't in pain or anything anymore. It still feels weird. It's still like taking some getting used to, and like, I don't know, occasionally, like after I brush and stuff, it feels strange. But for the most part, it's fine. And but it was 2 weeks after that I felt recovered, basically. And then I think right after that I got my stitches out, which was kind of painful. Was unpleasant. I don't know. I didn't think it would be that bad. But I guess it wasn't that bad. I think what was bad about it is I had to drive to Fort Collins. It takes 10 minutes to take these stitches out. And I know I have to go again for another graft, and then I'll have to go again for them to check the graft, and then I'll have to go again for them to take out the stitches. So I'm like, I've got 3 more times coming here. I really wish we could have condensed some of these into fewer appointments. That would have been great. I think I was originally set to get it done today, if I'm not mistaken. I think I was supposed to get it done on a Tuesday, and I was like, Tuesdays aren't great. Can we do it on a Wednesday? And they're like, 6 weeks later. But anyway, I think it'll be good, because I just want to get my piece done. I'm at the point now where I'm like, I think my piece is close enough and edited enough that I just need to go and do it and then get it over with, so I'm not worried about it and thinking about it so much, and not just changing a lot of things back and forth. And, you know, it's like, I don't know, maybe this is like a writing thing, is you sort of have to abandon the idea of things being perfect and just have to get in there with something that's perfect enough, right? That's like, it's ready for this stage now. So when you get your first draft out there, it's like your sentences and stuff, you're like, these aren't perfect, but they're perfect enough. And then you do your draft and you're like, all right, this isn't perfect, but it's perfect enough for me to move on to the next step and so on and so forth. Until you're kind of done. I don't know, that seems like a way to do it. I feel like a lot of us get stuck in this thing of trying to do everything perfectly, which will make you go crazy if you're writing something, because it's like, trying to do it perfectly, that's impossible, because there's no such thing as a subjective perfection, A, and B, it's like, there's always stuff you can change. Like, I know Tim O'Brien, The Things They Carried, which, you know, everyone fucking loved that book. They put out, like, an edited version of it, like, for 20 or 25 year anniversary or something, and the edits were just these tiny line edits that he had made. I can't imagine I would revisit a book like that, maybe. But it would take a lot for me. I don't know. If I had written something like that, and it was that successful and that beloved, I'm sure there'd be things in it that I was like, this was never exactly what I wanted. And I'm sure if I looked at it 20 or 25 years later, there'd be changes I would make. But I think I'd feel like, I think I did it there. I think that did the job. Like, does John Grisham go back and edit The Firm? No. Come on. You don't need to do that. Just move forward. I guess you gotta
move forward, right? You can't just keep redoing the
same shit over and over. Ugh, anyway, okay. I think that's all. I'm quite tired. And I wish I was asleep. I wish it was 7 p.m. I'd already gone to the gym and I was asleep. Instead of being 3:48, I have not gone to the gym and I am not asleep. 3:48 too. This is like a terrible time to get back into town. Cause it's like, I guess I could go to the gymnasium, but it's going to be crowded.
But if I wait till 7, I mean, that's like 3 hours away. That's not a great situation either.
There's no perfect situation. Weezer, Weezer in my brain. On the show. Weezer, Weezer. Okay. Okay. Clearly time to go. Clearly I've overstayed my welcome. Awesome diesel truck. Roaring down the highway. All right. We'll see you later.